Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we're bringing you a special edition of the show from the World Food Prize in Des Moines, Iowa. I sat down with U.S. Special Envoy for Global Food Security and the 2024 World Food Prize laureate, Dr. Kerry Fowler, to discuss his life work establishing the Global Seed Vault. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Food and Drug Administration's Human Foods Program will focus on microbiological food safety and nutrition next year under its reorganization. Some of the program's specific goals include issuing guidance on action levels for lead and food intended for infants and young children, finalizing the rule on healthy food labels, and proposing a rule on front-of-package nutrition labeling. The program will plan a multi-year strategic plan to advance its vision and mission throughout the next year. Election Day is Tuesday. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump are making some of their final campaign stops. Meanwhile, there are several House races in farm country districts that could be key to determining control of the chamber. According to data from the Cook Political Report, 11 districts held by Democrats and 14 represented by Republicans are considered toss-ups. 11 of those seats are held by House Ag Committee members or represent major farm districts. Some of the most competitive races to watch include Iowa Congressman Zach Nunn and Congresswoman Marionette Miller Meeks, North Carolina Congressman Don Davis, and California Congressman John Duarte. All seats will be up for re-election. Dr. Kerry Fowler and Dr. Jeffrey Houghton were honored as 2024 World Food Prize laureates at the Borlaug Dialogue this week for their longstanding contribution to seed conservation and crop biodiversity. We sat down with Dr. Kerry Fowler, current U.S. Envoy for Global Food Security, for an exclusive interview about his life work establishing the Global Seed Vault in Norway.
Well, 25 years ago, we of course recognized the importance of crop diversity. It's the raw material for agriculture, for plant breeding. It's mostly stored in the form of seed, and the seeds are stored in buildings, and anything and everything that can go wrong with a building was going wrong with seed collection stored in those buildings. So that wasn't really good enough, because every time we lose a collection of seeds, we lose diversity, and it's an extinction event. And that diversity of seeds could contain traits, characteristics, genes that might be terribly important, in fact, essential for the future productivity of a particular crop. So we wanted to have an insurance policy. And if you want an insurance policy to save seed, you do a couple of things. One is you go to a place where there are not too many troubles. So you go to some place that's away from the normal world. That would be close to the North Pole. And the second thing you do is you want to freeze seeds. That's how you conserve them long term. Again, close to the North Pole is a good thing for that. So I approached the Norwegian government and said, would you look into the feasibility of establishing a seed vault on an archipelago north of mainland Norway, close to the North Pole? And they turned the question back to me and said, do you know the answer to your own question? Is it feasible to do this? I said, no. They said, fine, you're the chair of the committee. So that started it.
Well, very cool. And can you kind of detail the importance of having this gene bank in the context of global food and global nutrition security?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, the collections of crop diversity really represent everything that we can have in the future in terms of our crop varieties. All the characteristics that we're going to need to adapt to climate or to water shortages or to fluctuations in climate or to new nutritional needs or corporate needs for food processing. So that's why we need to save this diversity. And I think we're particularly focused at the State Department, not just on food security, but nutrition security, because nutrition is really, it's connected with health. It makes children healthy or it makes them stunted. And we need to live in a peaceful world, and a peaceful world is not what we get when we have food insecurity. There are more than 700 million people that are food insecure in the world today, and more than 60 million children who are physically and cognitively stunted because of dietary deficiencies. So that's That's what we're trying to get at. We're trying to address that problem in the most fundamental way.
We'll be back with more from Dr. Fowler right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Making crops more resilient to climate change has been a major topic of discussion at the Borlaug Dialogue this week. We asked the 2024 World Food Prize laureate, Dr. Carrie Fowler, how climate change has exacerbated the biodiversity crisis.
Well, you know, climate change is affecting our agricultural crops in so many different ways. It's obviously higher average temperatures, but it's higher extremes and it's longer periods of extreme weather. And it's also a lot of fluctuation, and that's hard for a particular crop variety to deal with. You can more easily breed a crop variety for a higher extreme than you can for both the higher extreme and the lower end of the temperature scale. So it's going to present a lot of challenges to agriculture and to plant breeders, to farmers. Farmers know that we're having a lot of bad weather. And so I think in the future, we're going to have to conserve all the diversity, as we've been trying to do, of our agricultural crops, to give plant breeders as much as possible to work with as a raw material in their plant breeding work. We don't know what climate is going to do in the future and all the different problems it could cause. So that's why it's important to save all that diversity, to have all those options.
And what's the connection between that crop biodiversity and soil quality?
We have, plant breeders have typically gone for higher production in their crops. And of course, that's what the farmers need. But the farmers also need soil health and fertility to support that higher production. And one of the things that we're finding out is that root architecture, that's probably not a term everybody's familiar with, but how the roots go down in the soil, do they spread out, do they go down farther, is really important for soil health and fertility, and also important for the crop to be able to get the minerals and the nutrients that might be a little bit deeper down. Now, there's a lot of diversity in our agricultural crops. We have 250,000 different kinds of wheat in the Svalbard Global Seed Vault. So you can imagine that out of that 250,000, not all of them have exactly the same kind of root architecture. And we might be able to use that as a resource to create wheat plants or corn plants or tomato plants that have more efficient root structures, and that will help us build the soils, and it'll help productivity as well.
One thing I've heard you speak on this week is the potential with opportunity crops, especially in developing parts of Africa. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit about the potential with these varieties and improving global nutrition?
Sure. Well, we have been working with the African Union, Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, and supported by a number of other countries and also by the private sector, in focusing on some of these African traditional and indigenous crops. Why? A couple of reasons. One is they're nutrient rich and there are nutrition problems in Africa. So if we can get the production up of crops that are nutrient rich, everybody wins. They haven't been invested in the past, so we think we can make quantum leaps in production just by having more plant breeders, more scientists working on them now. And that's going to aid African countries in development. It's going to improve the health, particularly of children. And if we can do all those things, improve food and nutrition security in African countries, then we're also going to contribute to peace in Africa.
And Dr. Fowler, there's been a lot of focus on you and your work this week. What do you hope that everyone here attending at the World Food Prize and hearing your message around the world, what do you hope that their takeaway message is from your life's work?
Well, that's hard to say. I think that maybe the take-home message, maybe there are two. One is we do need to pay attention to conserving the fundamental raw materials for agriculture. The biodiversity underpins all of our agricultural systems. And the second is that as nice as it is to get an award like the World Food Prize, we ought to realize that many good people are doing great work out there. And one doesn't have to be a genius to get the World Food Prize, just ask me.
We'll be right back to talk with the Hormel CEO, Jim Snee, and his wife, Tammy, right after this.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver for the 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as a million-dollar rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to navigate taxes, trade, and technology as we dive into what's ahead for food and agriculture. The summit takes place on Monday, March 17th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back. The number of hungry people in Maurer County, Minnesota, where Hormel's Austin headquarters is located, did not budge for a decade. Hormel noticed this trend and launched the Hometown Food Security Project. We sat down with Jim Snee, president and CEO of Hormel, and his wife Tammy at the World Food Prize to learn about how this large corporation began such a local effort.
It's not anything new to the company in terms of what we've been focused on. So our philanthropic pillars have always been education and hunger. So we've been very engaged for a long period of time, but the opportunity of really dealing with food insecurity in our community, that's what's really different. It's just a different angle, if you will. And so what we've come to realize is in our hometown of Austin, Minnesota, the food insecurity rate of approximately 10% hadn't changed in a decade. Lots of good work, lots of really strong resources, but the impact wasn't being felt. And so Tammy and I had the opportunity to learn a lot more about food insecurity through our work with Baylor University. And so we said to each other, gosh, why can't we make a difference in our hometown? And what we did was we said, let's bring the community together.
And I think our focus, there's a lot of different ways to give back, but we wanted to get down to the root cause of why this hunger issue still existed in our community. And if we are going to make a change, we want to address basic needs first. And so if people are hungry, they're not learning in school, they're not able to perform in their jobs, and they also feel disenfranchised from the community if they're struggling just to make ends meet and they're worrying that their kids aren't going to get fed. So we thought the biggest impact that we can make is get that part fixed. We can come together and address that.
There's many unique challenges in a county like yours. How have you been able to connect with the community in unique ways?
One of the things that we have learned is that the alignment of the key organizations, alignment of the resources, and really the commitment to partner, because everyone's used to working in their own little silo. And that's not a bad thing because people are getting work done, but they're not collaborating and really taking advantage of the resources that are available. So really kind of digging down deeper and saying, what are the things that are unique to our community? Because a lot of the bigger challenges are very common. And I think that's where the work that Tammy and the coalition that's been built has really been able to dig in deeper and identify some of those challenges.
We took a science-based approach right when we started to make sure that we were engaging in work that would make a difference and something that we could measure. And also that we were engaging the dialogue of the people that Jim mentioned so that we weren't deciding for everybody what they needed, but we were listening to the community and listening to the lived experience of the people who were affected.
I was really interested to learn that Hormel added a new workforce wellness facilitator role. Can you tell us what that role does and the impact that it's had in the community?
One of the things that we have when we think about our team member population, especially in our manufacturing facilities, we have a lot of newcomers. And so as they're coming to our community for the first time, really helping them feel more welcome, helping them understand what resources are available in the company and in the community for them. But bringing somebody into the organization in this role who comes at it more from a social work perspective than just a management perspective has made a really, really big difference because that person's able to engage with them at a different level. And they're bringing questions and concerns and needs to her that we weren't hearing before.
How have you seen your employees across the board get involved in this program?
I mean, they've jumped in and been willing to engage and participate in a really positive way. And so we've had a number of events where we've reached out to our team members and there's been zero hesitation. So most recently, we did a huge food packing event at our high school. It was called Nourishing Champions to make sure that all of the students had snacks for their activities, whether that was an orchestra competition or a football game. And it was, Tammy could tell us the specific numbers, but to see our team members be willing to sign up to participate and be engaged on the front lawn of our high school was something that I'll never forget.
We had the entire high school on the lawn, which was a feat in itself. We worked with Matterbox, and it was 86 team members from Hormel who signed up and gave their morning, and then they were with other people from the community. So everybody came together and packed 9,000 pounds of food in 20 minutes because the kids, we told them they couldn't start until it was time, but they started early. So by the time we got going, they got the job done. And it was rewarding to hear the students say, we loved being in an activity that we could all participate in and we're all going to benefit from this. And they learn more about the topic because we're really focused on education and empowerment in addition to bringing more emphasis on the issue of food insecurity.
Wow. And how cool is it to have so many people in the community and on your team engaged? How do you see this program growing into the future?
Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of opportunity, especially in the communities where we live and work. I mean, we have a network of over 40 manufacturing facilities across the country. And so being able to identify those basic needs in each of those communities and then having the resources as a big multinational company to help lead and affect change by having the leadership teams in those communities get more involved, get more engaged, and to really be the convener. We're never going to be able to be the doers, but to help bring people together and to support all of those communities, whatever that need might be.
Wonderful. Jim and Tammy, thank you both so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more from ICA Director General Manuel Otero right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Manuel Otero is the Director General for the Inter-American Institute for Cooperation on Agriculture. We sat down with him to discuss an array of issues facing the Americas, beginning with his insight on the biggest challenges in getting farmers to adopt new technology that improves productivity.
The Americas is a very heterogeneous continent in which coexist very, very important food exporting nations like US, Canada, Brazil. In the case of Brazil, for every dollar imported, you have practically $10 from exports. But this coexists with Caribbean countries in which for every dollar imported, you have just 3 cents of exports. So we have to help each other, and technology, in other words, the new frontier of knowledge, offers a lot of opportunities that should have to be focused on small and medium farmers. Let me relate this issue with the rural connectivity, because we're facing several problems in rural areas, but one of them, probably the most decisive one, is that rural connectivity is not evolving, at least at the same pace that we are evolving in the urban centers.
And a question directed a bit at Mexico with the new Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, in charge. Do you think she will continue on the same path as her predecessor on biotechnology, or do you think she'll be more open to adoption there?
In technical cooperation, is a tango to be danced between two parties. The government defines the priorities, and we have the responsibility to accompany them. We obviously have a position regarding these issues, but it depends what are the demands and priorities defined by the Mexican government. I would like to reiterate that agriculture, health, bioeconomy, water management issues, small farmers are at the top of the list of the technical cooperation agenda.
And of course, this week, getting young people involved in agriculture and these solutions has been a big theme. How are you trying to encourage more young people across Central America to get involved in farming and agricultural careers?
I guess evolving towards an open door institution. For this year, we are planning to receive 15,000 visitors. Probably next year, we will reach 20,000 visitors. Our image is evolving towards a technological hub. We're making all the efforts to demonstrate that the virtual reality, robotic, all type of new technologies are going to define the basis of the new agriculture. And we need young people involved. At the same time, we have launched programs to attract rural women. Probably this year we finished with more than 1,000 women in Costa Rica, but we are projecting our work towards El Salvador, Honduras. We need the young people be involved and committed with the new technologies.
Looking to the future, what's your vision for how the organization will change and evolve over the next decade to meet those needs?
In the case of AICA, for example, we are changing based upon three principles. One of them is that from the Americas, we have to look at the rest of the world. Second, AICA is a place in which we promote the dialogue for having collective action. Collective action is very, very important. No one country, no one organization is going to save the planet. It has have to be the result of the joint work of several organizations. And last, and I would like to emphasize, we are an open-minded organization, open doors, receiving all visitors to show that there is a future and there is hope linked with agriculture.
Stay tuned for a look at the week ahead right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Achieving excellence isn't easy. It's reserved for those willing to work for it. Farmers like you, who strive for bigger yields and better education. People who settle for nothing less than the very best. Because you know excellence can only be achieved through hard work, commitment, and perseverance. Take your operation to new heights and join us for the 2025 Commodity Classic, Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Election Day is Tuesday. Be sure to vote on November 5th or before at an early polling location. On Friday, USDA will release its monthly crop production report and the next World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.